Russian forces continue their attacks on Ukraine's eastern Donbas region.
This is exactly what's happening when, you know, important decisions in terms of Ukrainian-European integration are on the way. Russia starts to attack more.
Plus the impact Russia's war on Ukraine is having on those who can't flee.
We're seeing a lot of these displaced looking for just simple basic housing for temporary, but also medium and long-term use.
And later in the program, the United Nations marks World Refugee Day in the shadow of what it says is the largest displacement crisis since World War II. Today is Monday, June 20th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Steve Miller. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky told the country that they should expect greater hostile activity from Russia this week as the European Union leaders consider whether to support candidate status for Ukraine within the EU. The EU Commission recommended last week that Ukraine receive candidate status. The 27 member states will discuss the issue and give their votes during a summit both Thursday and on Friday. If Ukraine does advance to candidate status, the process for joining the EU in full could take several years. Zelensky's remarks come after NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg warned on Sunday that Russia's war in Ukraine could be long-lasting, but said that Western allies should not curb their support for Kyiv's forces. And to get a better understanding of what's taking place on the ground, earlier I spoke with Anna Chernikova in Kyiv.
The whole Donbas area is quite intensive in terms of fightings. And of course, we have to, again, concentrate on Severodonetsk because this is the hottest point. But still, we should at the same time not forget that Donbas area in general is, under quite a lot of fightings and artillery, especially attacks from the Russian side. So if we look in general, we can see that the activity is enhancing. And what Ukrainian officials are saying and expecting that this week EU will be voting for giving Ukraine a candidacy for the membership in the EU. And Ukrainian officials are expecting even more intensifying fightings because of that, because of course Russia is not happy, and normally this is exactly what's happening when important decisions in terms of Ukrainian-European integration are on the way. Russia starts to attack more and attack especially civilian society. So this week is very, very tough, and expected quite huge fightings are expecting, and all civilians are asked to be very careful and to be very attentive especially when air raid sirens are on.
So Anna, if we take a closer look at Severodonetsk, that key city in the east, what can you tell us about the fighting that's been going on for some time?
Severodonetsk, huge fightings, and it remains the toughest point. Unfortunately, today Ukrainian forces lost some territories near Severodonetsk. We know from certain sources, from the official announcements by Ukrainian side, that there is information that Russian forces are ordered to get to the administrative border of Severodonetsk by June 26. This is according to what Ukrainian intelligence is finding out and confirming. So this is probably also could be as a reason and explanation why the fightings are intensifying so much, and in Severodonetsk in particular, we can witness that more and more attacks are happening and more people are involved. So this is in general, and of course we should not also forget about Izum, because Izum remains this point in the middle that keeps. At one point, defending around, but at the same point, Russians are trying to go forward and move towards Slovyansk.
Anna Chernikova reports for us from Kyiv, Ukraine, the country's capital. Anna, thank you again for your reporting.
Thank you, Steve.
The BBC reports that China has become the largest importer of Russian oil, digging in some 55% more oil this year than in 2021 and displacing Saudi Arabia as the country's largest supplier. The United States banned Russian oil imports back in March. Speaking at the Three Seas Initiative Summit via video link, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said that greater energy independence would make member states less vulnerable to the Kremlin's coercion.
It will deprive the Russian government of massive resources that's used to help bankroll its attack on the independence of Ukraine, not to mention several other countries in recent years.
The Three Seas Initiative brings together 12 European Union member states located around the Adriatic, Baltic, and Black Seas. It aims to boost economic ties and enhance energy, transport, and digital links among the countries. The Kremlin also said on Monday that Europe only has itself to blame for the crisis in the gas market. Meanwhile, British Foreign Secretary Liz Truss countered that Russian President Vladimir Putin is not just targeting Ukraine in his appalling hybrid war.
He's trying to hold us all to ransom by weaponizing hunger and Russian energy. He's gambling that the free world will tire in the face of his aggression. We are not tired, and we can never tire, in defense of freedom and democracy. And we will show that by doing everything possible to ensure that Ukraine prevails.
VOA Eastern Europe Bureau Chief Miroslava Gongadze is currently in Kyiv, and she was recently speaking with boxing champions and brothers Volodymyr and Vitaly Klitschko, the latter of which is also the mayor of Ukraine's capital city. She asked why Volodymyr Klitschko has been in Kyiv since the onset of the war.
It's not just Kyiv, it's just the horror of the war that shouldn't happen. The call of duty, I would say it this way. And I believe that all the Ukrainians, men and women, feel this call of duty. And there is not such thing as just, you just feel where you need to be. And we all share the same feelings. It's pretty obvious, especially when you're home, where your children going to school, your grandparents burying the ground, you're having the memories of spending time and having your friends and family as part of the country and society and history, your own life history. So you just defend your right to live and choose. And I think that's pretty much reflecting probably everyone in Ukraine.
How do you feel about the world supporting Ukraine and understanding this war? Do they understand what is going on in Ukraine today?
I would describe as evolution. Even the war has an evolution. Nothing can happen from one day to the next. And it all takes time, fortunately and unfortunately. Fortunately for us, it didn't last 3 days. If that would last 3 days, then they would have captured, Russian military force would have captured Ukraine and the capital. And understanding that even though we need it now, but understanding it takes time for the free world to wake up, to understand that that this war is just the beginning. If we won't stop Russian military forces here, it's just the beginning. They will knock on the door of the other nations immediately after capturing and conquering Ukraine, in case of conquering, and that should be so obvious. And slowly the world is waking up, slowly people understand, governments understand the jeopardy of their free world that's still functioning. And it takes time, and there's a certain evolution of it. Now, and I'm more than sure, especially with the visit of the key politicians, it's extremely important sign that the world is not in agreement with this aggression that came from Russia. And the more it's going to be clear, and support as well, not just humanitarian, financial, but also military support from the free world, is extremely important to show Russia It is not okay in 2022, after the Second World War, break the international law and invade other country.
And as she spoke to Vitaly Klitschko, who is the mayor, he described efforts to rebuild the city while standing in front of a destroyed apartment building.
We see the impact from this war. This lie from Russian propaganda is a special operation against military forces. In our hometown, destroyed more than 220 apartments building where live civilians. And this is target. Four people died. It's everything what told Russian propaganda. It's liar. We right now make a reconstruction, and our main priority until the cold time, the people have to move in this building, and that's why we invest so much money right now to make a reconstruction of this building, and the general construction is stable, and that's why they give a chance right now to rebuild this building as fast as possible. I was here a couple of months ago. If the rockets landed in the building, and right now I have a meeting with people who live in this building. Yes, of course, everyone, they have a question when we can come back. And the main question for every Ukrainian, when this war will be stopped. Sorry for a second question, I doesn't have an answer. Just one person in the world who beginning the war can give the answer when the war stopped. The man sitting in Kremlin in Moscow.
You said you put in a lot of money in this effort to rebuild the city, but the economy is in shame in Ukraine right now. It's very, very difficult to find that money. Western community, West, is trying to help. Do you think they're helping enough?
First of all, I want to say thank you very much for everyone who support Ukraine, who support our fight for independence, for territorial integrity, for our values. Because the reason of this senseless war, the wish of Ukrainian to be the part of democratic countries, democratic world, a European family. And our wish doesn't accept in Moscow. They want to rebuild Soviet Empire. We was in USSR and we don't want back to USSR. It's the reason of the war. Everyone have to understand that. We need the help. Right now, the economy in our country totally destroyed. The infrastructure destroyed. We see this a lot of buildings destroyed, and that's why we need help. We need help from countries who can help right now. We need political help. We need economical help. We need defensive weapons. And the question is enough. If the war will be stopped, we can say it's enough. Right now, we need help. First point, and second point, we don't know how long will be this senseless war. We're defending not just our city and our country, not just our families and our children. We're defending every one of you in the West, because we don't know how far go the Russians.
That was VOA Eastern Europe Bureau Chief Miroslava Gongadze speaking to both Vladimir and Vitaly Klitschko in Kyiv. Now, for the latest updates on Ukraine, be sure to visit our website. You can find it at voanews.com/flashpoint. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Miller. Tamara Demoria is the Chief Humanitarian Officer for Chorus International, a non-governmental organization that works with communities to help them recover from natural and other disasters. Recently, I spoke to her in Georgia, just after she completed an on-the-ground visit to Ukraine. Now, in part one of our conversation, she describes what she saw.
So I spent about 2 weeks basically visiting pretty much all possible points of IDP, internally displaced population settlements. I raced from the western part of the country all the way to the east as close as I could get to Kharkiv, for instance. I could hear the the bombs exploding and the shooting from the Ukrainian side all the way to the other side. So it was a pretty emotional trip because I got to see and speak to not just the officials and other international organizations as well as the UN, but the people themselves that are living through the war on a daily basis. We're seeing a lot of these displaced looking for just simple basic housing for temporary, but also medium and long-term use. Those that have nowhere to go are basically going into collective centers such as schools, kindergartens, the sports facilities, so-called sanatoriums, which used to be the rehabilitation, like physical therapy resorts, and are really counting on support from everybody else, including the international organizations.
So as you're meeting and speaking with these people, what are they sharing with you?
They're talking about lack of clothing because a lot of them have left when it was winter season. Now they're entering summer season and it's getting really hot in Ukraine. However, the winter is coming back very soon. It will be at a blink of an eye. We will be in October, which is going to be pretty harsh. And harsh winter season is another quite concerning area or element in Ukrainian response. They're talking about access to food. They're talking about missed education opportunities of school years of their children. I've heard many stories about women particularly having left their husbands back there to fight and them fleeing with elderly parents, children, and not necessarily knowing where to go. So there's a lot of chaotic displacement still happening. And I think I saw a lot of confusion as to what would the future long-term resettlement plan would be. The government is still imposing martial law, and it's really unclear as to what their plans are. With international support, you see a lot of that sort of happening to maintain the life-saving needs, but we're still not there. We're not in the recovery stage, and it will be quite a journey. Sanitary conditions of these places are deteriorating, although they're trying to keep it as clean as possible to prevent any infections. It's still pretty daunting when you visit some of the places as to what this could turn into.
What was it like traveling throughout Ukraine? Because we have spoken to individuals since the latest invasion began, and at times they have talked about endless caravans on the roads and having to cross multiple checkpoints. So what did you experience?
The situation is pretty fluid. So you see a lot of fluidity into how the cordons and how the checkpoints are set up. So further to the west, there is a little bit more flexible movement. Checkpoints still exist, but they're quite friendly, although it may take time if you're caught up in the rush hour because people try to continue their lives as usual. A lot of them go to work, security and safety permitting. And unless there's a particular target, the rocket falling and targeting a specific area, which prevents them from moving freely around that geography, then obviously they're trying to maintain the daily life as usual. So further to the west, situation is a little more lax, but as you travel towards Kyiv and you travel further from Kyiv to the eastern parts of the country, you definitely see that this intensity of checking, they check your passport, you go through a number of questions. So checkpoints is pretty normal that you would face across all the way throughout the journey. Convoys are less likely unless you're really getting close to the front lines, and this is where the situation becomes pretty tense. You can feel that the country is not at ease. As you travel through Ukraine, there are pockets where you will definitely see yourself getting very close. Even by hearing it, the audiovisual is pretty intense and quite emotional. The security is changing. It is not necessarily very stable. There's very often you get woken up by the alarm, the sirens that prompt you that there is a potential for the rocket as it was fired from different parts of the country. So that is the normal life that they try to live through.
That was Chorus International's Chief Humanitarian Officer, Tamar Demoria, and we'll have more of our conversation tomorrow. On this June 20th, World Refugee Day, the United Nations is marking the occasion in the shadow of what it is calling the largest displacement crisis since World War II. In a video that was posted on Twitter, UN Refugee Agency Goodwill Ambassador, American actor Ben Stiller, shared that he was in Ukraine to stand in solidarity with people displaced by war and conflict all around the world.
I'm meeting people who've been impacted by the war and hearing how it's changed their lives. War and violence are devastating people all over the world. Nobody chooses to flee their home. Seeking safety is a right, and it needs to be upheld for every person.
Now, according to the United Nations, at least 7.7 million Ukrainians have become refugees since Russia's latest invasion, and another 7 million plus are internally displaced. VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir rounds us out.
Before Russia invaded Ukraine in February, the UN Refugee Agency says there were already 89 million forcibly displaced persons worldwide. With the Ukrainian exodus, the number now tops 100 million. Filippo Grandi, High Commissioner for Refugees.
Remember, we are now all focused on Ukraine very much, but Ukraine comes after a line of other emergencies.
The agency's new Global Trends report says that five crises last year accounted for nearly 70% of all displaced people. They are from Syria, Venezuela, Afghanistan, South Sudan, and Myanmar. In Afghanistan, 24 million people need humanitarian aid. The economy is in tatters, and the Taliban is imposing more restrictions on women and girls. UNHCR says all these pressures have pushed 2.7 million Afghans to leave. Peter Kessler is the UNHCR spokesperson in Afghanistan.
So people are crossing the borders, sometimes with visas, but most of the time without visas and without documentation, sometimes up to 20,000 people a day.
Many people flee to neighboring countries. More than 1 million have left Ukraine for safety in Poland. Rafał Kostrzyński is the UNHCR spokesperson in Poland.
People, refugees, they flee not as far as possible from the conflict, but as close as possible. And they return not as late as possible, but as early as possible.
Only 5.7 million internally displaced persons and refugees returned home or to their place of origin in 2021. The focus for this year's World Refugee Day on June 20th is the right to seek safety. Richer nations have mixed records on welcoming refugees and asylum seekers. The High Commissioner for Refugees says he hopes those nations now understand the relationship between bombs and flight. High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi.
People flee because they're afraid. It's not just the Ukrainians. The Syrians have fled bombs. People in Tigray have fled bombs. People in the Sahel flee either bombs or vicious attacks. So fear of insecurity is the same whether you are a Ukrainian or a Nicaraguan.
Shaken by fear and uncertainty, Irina Morkovas fled Ukraine with her son soon after Russia invaded. Irina Morkovas is a Ukrainian refugee, leaving her husband behind.
We took just the most important things and cross the border.
Now in the Netherlands, Morkovas, an artist, has collaborated with UNHCR on this year's World Refugee Day Twitter emoji. Again, Irina Morkovas.
When we open a door of our house to people who need it, for refugees, for example, who need help, we like open our heart because house is heart of the family.
For tens of millions of refugees and displaced people worldwide, they also hope to find a safe and warm welcome. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
And that's going to do it for us today. Be sure to stay up to date with our continuing coverage, not only on Ukraine, but news and events from around the world. You can do so 24 hours a day at voanews.com and on our social media platforms. Just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire team at Flashpoint Ukraine, thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm VOA's Steve Miller. Be well, be safe, and good night.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.